What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Kevin Scarrett, and again, I am with Amy Zander. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, everybody.
So we have, I think, the most important part of a company's identity is, or part of their brand, is to really make sure that their identity is rock solid. And the core cornerstone element of their identity is their logo. So we're going to be talking about logos today.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated by logos, and I know that it's one of the areas of one of your areas of expertise. You create logos for companies, and you know a lot about design and things like that. So I'm really excited to hear what you have to say about it. One of the things that we would like our listeners to do to help you out is that we have a PDF on our website that has a lot of logos, and we're going to be referring to it. You don't necessarily have to look at it, but it might help for the discussion. So pause your podcast, go to brandarchetypes.com/logos.pdf and bring up that PDF if you want to refer to it.
And that's logos.pdf, all lowercase.
All right, welcome back. If you grabbed that PDF, and if you didn't, that's okay. The conversation's still going to be good, and all these logos you've probably seen and can picture in your mind anyway, so no problems there. So there's some lingo associated with logos. Most people understand the word logo. They know that that's like the company's icon or things like that, but there's other words and things that people use for this. So Kevin, you want to talk about that?
Sure. Let's If I bring up a logo that's on our sheet here, if you look at page one in the upper left, we see the Tropicana logo, and we've all seen that before, having our morning orange juice, right?
Yep.
So the overall presentation is commonly called the signature, and a lot of these terms that I'm going to be throwing out here, again, like we've explained in our previous podcast, we want to make sure that we're using the words in the same way as each other. And so there are people who refer to different elements of logo design differently, but that's kind of the point of the explanation here. So the overall presentation we call the signature, and the letters themselves, so the orange letters of Tropicana, we refer to as logo type, you know, or type is as in typeface or typeset, right? And then the little green leaf that's above the I is the icon or the graphic. So when we refer to the signature, it's the overall presentation, and then the different elements are the logo type and the graphic. Okay?
Makes sense.
Yep. So once you put all those together, you can now do that in a number of different ways. So if we take a look at page one of this document, and you've recognized them all. You probably have recognized them all. You know, Domino's Pizza and Ford and
Lego,
Levi's and, yeah, Heinz Ketchup, right? So you've seen all of these, but you might not know right away that all of these are examples of signatures where the icon or the graphic is always connected to the logo type.
Right.
Like you would never see the BMW without the blue and the white crosshatch. You would never see Domino's Pizza's logo without the Domino's.
Right. Or right. If you just saw the Domino by itself, it could mean lots of things, not necessarily Domino's
right.
Pizza. Right.
Yeah. So let's go to page two. Similarly, you recognize all of these.
Google,
you
know, FedEx, Campbell's, Ace Disney. Hardware, Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Dell. These are all examples of signatures that are comprised of logo type only. There are no graphics here.
Right.
And there's actually an exception that we're going to bring up later. And if you're looking at the page right now, there's an exception here. I don't see any graphics. It's really kind of a cute and fun one that Amy's going to talk about later. And then if you go to the third page, these are all examples of logos where not only can you detach the the icon from the signature, but very commonly it is. And notable omissions from this page, and by the time we actually launch this podcast, I'm actually going to update this page to include both Target and Nike, which are awesome examples of brands that detach their icon from their signature. Not only do they do that, Nike goes now so far as to only include its icon. Their logo has become so iconic that the swoosh of their logo, they don't even need to use the word Nike anymore. People recognize it
right.
That strongly.
And yeah. For listeners who don't have this page set up, some of the examples on this page that Kevin was talking about with their icon and their logo can be detached is Apple, Camel Cigarettes that has the camel word and then the actual camel. McDonald's with the arch and then the word McDonald's is another example. Swatch, they have the looks like a Swiss cross from their flag. They have that separated from their word. Toyota, things like that. And
the most recognizable one is the golden arches. You know, how often have you ever driven down the highway and you're looking for the golden arches at over the next exit? You know, you're not looking for the word McDonald's, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so we look at all these and we can say, okay, that's interesting, Kevin. That's interesting, Amy, that there are different kinds of logos and you can categorize them that way. But what is it about these logos that allowed them to be included on these sheets, that these are good enough and that they are designed in a way that they're considered good? So we start to explore what is it that makes a good logo. So let's start going through that. Well, the first one is elegant simplicity. If a logo is elegantly simple, then it by its nature gets some of the benefits. And one of them, one of those benefits is if you design a logo that's elegantly simple, then it's probably very scalable. So you've seen this before, Amy?
I have. This is one of the things I come across most often, I think, with my clients when talking about logos, is something that people who aren't experts on logo design don't think about. But you have to take your logo and you have to be able to put it on a huge billboard or on a small baseball hat or a pen or something like that. And they don't always think about the scalability of their logo. And sometimes there's a lot of factors that go into that. And sometimes that's shape. Is one of the things. And so that's something that a logo expert can help clients with when they're revamping or creating a new logo, is just making sure that it's scalable to do all the things they want it to do.
Now, as we talk about the difference between let's call it a square-ish billboard and a very lengthy rectangular shape like the side of a ballpoint pen. Now, that billboard might be 30 feet high, you know, 30 feet square, where a ballpoint pen you might only have 30 or 60 pixels, let alone feet, right? So scalability, if I take any of these logos that you're looking at on these sheets and I scale them down to the size of a ballpoint pen, they'll all still work. You'll recognize them. Some of the words you might have a little trouble reading, but you'll still recognize the logo. Where if you take a look at the very last page, the fourth page of this sheet, there are a handful of logos that we would classify as poor logo design. Now imagine if I were to take the Alien Wizard Flying Saucer logo and put that on the side of a ballpoint pen.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to read any of that.
Yeah, it would just become a greenish yellow blob, right?
Right.
And that's not elegant simplicity. There's just way too much detail in that logo. So elegant simplicity, the counter of that is you just try to do too much, too many parts, too much information, too much detail, too many fine lines, too much of whatever, right?
Right. And the logic behind that is that once you get your brand equity and things like that and people start recognizing your logo, they understand what it is because they recognize it as an indication of your business. You don't need to put everything in your logo that you want to tell everybody about your business. And that's what some people, when they first start out, feel like they got to put way too much stuff in there, put their tagline in there or the company name or products. And that's just not necessary.
Yeah. So if I were to ask you, what does the Nike swoosh mean? In our previous podcast, we talk about how it's the wing of the goddess Nike, and it has a lot to do with the brand, the hero brand. And it has not little, it has nothing to do with shoes.
Right, but you don't even have to know that Nike winged goddess thing to recognize their logo now as connected with their name at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not the outline of a shoe or the pattern of a sole, you know, shoe print.
Shoelaces.
It's not, you know, they don't try to tap directly into something that's super recognizable in a highly detailed way.
Right.
So another not obvious until it's pointed out to you, element of really good logo design, and this is not exclusive. In fact, even on these sheets, you're going to see that it's not exclusive. But most often, good logo design is based on fundamental shapes. So if I ask you to look at the first page, and Amy, and I say square, what pops out to you?
I was going back to that page. Sorry. Sprite. Pops out, Exxon, Domino's.
Yeah. Right. Now, if I say circle, I'm going to do it really quickly.
BMW, here. Ford.
Right. Yeah.
Ford oval. Is an oval, Land Rover.
Yeah. Okay. And if I say rectangular, parallelogram, square, diamond, I mean, basic shapes. Now, not all of them are true to this. So if I look, if you look at Levi's or Heinz or Hallmark, they're not really based on a fundamental shape, but Levi's and Heinz are definitely based on very simple shapes.
Right.
And even the Hallmark, even though the word, the logotype of the signature is never removed from the crown, you could imagine putting that crown on a baseball hat or something like that.
Right.
You could separate, even though they never do, you could imagine them doing that.
Right.
And the crown would be considered a simple shape. So if you base your logo signature on a simple shape, that leads you to start making really good decisions. It leads you to not go over the top with too much detail and too much stuff. Okay?
Right. So one of the things that, say, for instance, like veterinary clinics, their logo might be like a cat and a dog. And those are not like basic shapes. It's a dog and a cat, and they have round curves and ears and whiskers and all that kind of stuff. And that's one of the things that can make it more difficult. So that's just an example of something that wouldn't be a basic shape.
Now, let's say you do take the concept of dog, and I turn it into a very simple, scalable, elegantly simple shape. Now that qualifies, but the concept of having to put a dog and a cat into a logo, it's a little cliche. Only is it a little cliche, it's a lot cliche.
Right, and that's a topic for another podcast.
So the shape selection, though, is really interesting. We're talking about brand archetypes, and let's say I ask, and I'm going to catch Amy off guard here. Let's see how
you
she
can
does.
Try.
So let's say, Amy, we're going to talk about a ruler archetype. What kind of shape should I pick?
Well, something strong, something would think a square, maybe not a circle. You want a hard edge to that ruler.
Ah, very good. With angles. Yeah. Yep. Very angular and linear, not curvilinear.
Right.
Right. So if I was going for an innocent archetype, I'd think the opposite.
Correct.
You know, something
softer.
Oval or, you know, curves.
Right.
Rounded corners. Now, again, these are not hard and fast rules. Of course, I could create a very elegantly simple, pastel-y, very soft and warm and fuzzy square-shaped logo for an innocent archetype. But it's a general idea to keep in mind if you're struggling with a logo design. To think about these things and experiment with them as you're going through the design process, right?
Right. And then, you know, the next thing to think about are colors. And we've talked previously about colors, too, as opposed to your brand and your archetype and things like that. But it also carries over into your logo. So I'm going to talk about that.
Yeah. So, Amy, what kind of colors should I pick if I'm a jester?
Bright, bold, primary, in-your-face colors.
Yeah, and I'm allowed to go super saturated with a jester archetype because it's a super energetic brand, right?
Right.
A brand strategy. But what about regular guy? How do neon colors fit with a regular guy, neighborly archetype?
Neon? I don't know if I'd pick neon for a neighbor.
Yeah, a little bit too much energy, right? And we're going into this discussion of color with a question and asking our listeners to try to do this on their own. And you know, our listeners don't necessarily have a whole lot of experience with these brand archetype ideas. That's the whole point of the podcast, is we're exploring this. But when we ask the questions like this and you try to give an answer from your gut, that doesn't seem like it's a very regimented process, that there's got to be a better way to do that. Well, actually, no, going from your gut is the point. We want people to make these decisions from their gut, because doing that is the best way to get the right answer, to always keep yourself true to your brand. So let's consider other things with colors. You know, so there's the color intensity. You know, how much color is there? Do you have a really wide color palette? Do you have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different hues? Or is it a narrow color palette? You know, like, you know, lots of shades of gray with just a pop of red. Or do you have 2 accent colors and 1 primary color? So there's a website that was created by Adobe, and you can find it at color.adobe.com. That allows you to explore the mathematical proportions of how colors relate to each other. You can pick a primary color and then click a button, and it'll automatically pick the complementary or analogous colors. Or you can explore the tool all you want there. It's really actually kind of cool. And people will create whole color palettes and save them to the site, and people will vote them up and down. And it's a really, really interesting tool to explore colors. But when you're talking about trying to get a feel within a brand archetype, colors are hugely important. Colors evoke emotions, whether you want them to or not. There is a whole study, there's a whole industry in color theory and color analysis.
Yep. And you can find the information that we talk about in our podcast in the show notes for each podcast episode. So that link will be in there, including a link to the PDF that we're referring to.
Right. So colors evoke emotions very clearly, very, very. And we've all heard these, you know, red evokes anger or strong emotions.
Or passion.
Or passion.
There's probably a fine line between passion and anger.
That's right. Soft greens will promote a feeling of healthiness, and pastel blues will promote peacefulness. But these are not hard and fast rules. Again, you know, there's a process that I went through with my previous agency. The agency was Acorn Creative, and we were a jester archetype. Because of the word acorn, we used lots of earth tones and browns and oranges and burnt umbers. And so it was a very, very subdued, earthy kind of feel. But because we had these pops of bright orange and yellow, there was enough playfulness in it. So again, these theories, these ideas can be broken by a good designer. And how you determine if you're on track is, once the design is done, once the piece is done, you go with your gut, look at it. Does it feel jestery enough? Have you pushed the envelope of how you're using the colors in the context of the overall presentation of the logo? Okay.
Sounds good. So the next part of your logo after colors is the font that you pick. And you've mentioned before that there are like just almost countless fonts available.
Oh yeah. Yep. Many, many, many tens of thousands of fonts. So let's take a just look at this page. Is there a difference in how the logo feels? Now let's take 2 logos that are identical in structure, the Tropicana logo, and right below that is the Corona logo. And structurally, they are logo type with a simple icon in the middle above the logo type.
Right.
Right? But look at how different they look and feel. Right. The color selection, the font face is where we're really going. So the Tropicana, if you're trying to convey, you know, a feeling of orange, you know, kind of fun and playful oranginess, why not pick a puffy, bold font? Right? If you're trying to have a crown in your logo like Corona, and you're trying to create a feeling of, you know, old English elegance, then why not pick an old English font face?
Yep.
And when you do that, it dramatically impacts the emotion. So Cartoon Network having that their bold font face and kind of funky shapes to the letter N, and the flip-flopping back and forth of the black and white, there's no color there. It's kind of unusual that you would have a kids network with no color in the logo, but it works.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was looking at the Tropicana logo and the Corona logo, I was thinking about how different it would be if you switched those. Like if the Tropicana was the old English and the other, it wouldn't work. It would just totally set a completely different tone for the product and the brand.
Yeah, in fact, that would be kind of a interesting little exercise, is to actually do that as a quiz to see if you can cross match the, you know, which font faces or which colors were misplaced.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
How really well do you have these really fundamental identities? You know, I mean, everybody would be able to pick up Nike, you know. Okay, so what color does Nike use?
Well, I most identify them with black and white.
Right, but they always use a little splash of red.
Right,
you know?
They do,
so
yeah.
A lot, yeah, right. Okay, so let's dive a little bit deeper. Real obvious that logos utilize color and font faces is in their creation. Pretty obvious. But let's talk about implied meaning. And when I say implied meaning, I'm talking about non-direct meaning. Like the logo for the veterinarian that had the dog and the cat.
Right.
That's pretty darn direct.
Yeah,
right?
But then how we mentioned about Nike has the implied meaning that it actually is the winged god, the goddess's wing, which means swiftness and can go back to running and shoes and that kind of thing. So This is really cool. And this is one of those things that, like, once you start thinking about it and looking at it, you can't not see it.
You can't stop yourself.
I know,
right?
I know. And years ago, when you and I started talking about logos, you pointed out to me the implied meaning in the FedEx logo. And
yeah, so everybody turn to page 2 quickly, right in the middle.
Yeah, and so if you look at the FedEx logo, first...
Hold on, stop. Okay, go ahead and do it, everybody. Look at the logo. Remember, go back, we said that there are no icons on this page, right?
Right, but actually there's a sneaky icon in the FedEx logo. If you look at it, the orange E and the X in between them creates an arrow.
So it's not actually an icon, it's the negative space, the shape of the negative space between those two letters.
Ah, tricky.
Do you think that that was done by accident?
No, not at all. But I didn't see it until you pointed it out to me, and now I can't not see it when I look at their logo.
Right. And there are lots of little, these are called Easter eggs. There are lots of Easter eggs that are found in logos internationally. And if you just do logo Easter eggs, do a Google search for logo Easter eggs, you'll find lots of them. One of my favorites that I just recently found out about just a few months ago, Wendy's redid their logo, and they're a regular guy or neighbor archetype, right?
Right.
If you look at the collar, Wendy's collar in the logo, it now has the word mom in it.
Yeah, they made it so it's a lot more obvious, right? Because before,
yeah, yep.
it always had it, but it wasn't quite so obvious.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's look at more meaning. If we go back to page 1, and we talked about the Tropicana, and we talked about their puffy font. So, Amy, what do you think that puffy font symbolizes?
Well, you alluded to it a little while ago. I mean, it's health and it's sunshine and happiness because, you
but,
know.
But the orange letters themselves are?
Orange juice.
The orange.
Right.
The actual orange.
Right.
Right. And so the little leaf is?
The orange leaf.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not really implied meaning. It's pretty darn direct.
Right.
So I start with that one. And now let's go down from there. Let's be a little less obvious about what the meaning is. So take a look at the budget logo. We have the blue letters and these two orange triangles, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the meaning behind the logo?
Well, to me, the orange triangles underneath kind of look like a road.
Yeah, the space between the triangles.
Right.
Again, we're looking at negative space.
Budget car rental.
Budget car rental, right? Of course you're going to have a road. And what is the most simple way to imply a road? And it's that shape going off into the horizon, right?
Right.
Okay, so that's a little bit less obvious, but still pretty there, right?
Right.
Right next to that, we find the BMW logo with a blue and white kind of crosshatch and a grid. Any idea what that might mean?
You've told me this, but I don't want to get it wrong because I don't quite remember, so I'll let you explain it.
Sure. Well, you have to understand that BMW, Bavarian Motor Works, did not used to always create cars before they created airplanes or airplane engines. And so the blue and the white is the propeller, the white propeller revolving through the blue of the sky in the background.
Nice.
Do you need to know that?
No.
Now that you see it, you're not going to ever not see it. And it's kind of cool, right? It's a cool little hint, right?
Yeah.
But that one almost always has to be explained to people, right? And the one that I think is the most obscure, and this is actually an older version of the BBC logo, but right up next to that, we have BBC with three little splotches of color, red, green, and blue. Any idea what that's all about?
I don't.
So red, green, and blue are the three colors that are used in the pixels of TV broadcast.
Oh.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. Do you need to know that? No, you don't need to know that, but it is kind of cool that they picked up a little hint of who they are and what they do and dropped it into the logo. So how much cooler is it to have these kind of little hints or implied meanings as opposed to the direct dog and the cat or, you know, or the wrench for an auto body shop, right?
Right.
Yeah. So building in a little bit of implied meaning with the industry, the product, the service, not being overly direct, but just to imply it. And it's not just elegant, it's interesting, and it adds a lot of depth and value to the logo. Okay.
I agree. And after we talk about implied meaning, this also going back to talking about scalability, that's one part of a variation, but there's also other variations that you have to think about with your logo too. How easily does it translate to black and white or full color if you want to make it 3D or have textures? So, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people will say, well, that's not my logo. Well, it's a variation of a logo of your logo. Well, that's not my logo. Well, then I explain to them that really well thought out identities, people who spend a lot of time creating and planning out how an identity is used, almost never create a single version of their logo. They will have all of these variations like you've just outlined. You know, do you have a black and white version or a full color version? Or how about rearranging the pieces in a way where it's more appropriate for the context of the presentation? For example, probably 90% of the time you'll see budget with the triangles below the words budget.
Right.
Right. And it becomes this very rectangular, almost squarish presentation. Mm-hmm. Right. But what if you tried to put that on the side of a ballpoint pen? Well, isn't it handy that budget also allows a variation where the triangles are to the right of the word budget, and it becomes this very long rectangular landscape presentation.
Right. Right?
So BMW with their glossy reflections and the beveling on the shapes and the, you know, indents and the, you know, that it has a very 3D look to it. But what if they wanted to present that as a white only overlay over a colored picture? Then they would need to strip that logo down and have it be just a single color. And they have done that. Of course they've done that. So be flexible when you create your logos or look at your current logo. If you found that you've been restricted in how it's used in the past, or you've used it in the past and it just doesn't look good, consider allowing your logo, your identity, to have variations to allow for this flexibility.
Right. And then this brings up a good point that when you create your marketing plan and things like that for your company, you should also consider creating rules for your logo and for your team. So things like when you talked about budget, they allow the part of the road to be to the right of the logo. Write these rules down. You can do this with our logo, but you can't do this with your logo.
Right. And what you're referring to is it's called a style guide.
Right. But it's an important thing to consider because you want to have consistency throughout everything that you do with your brand, and you don't want somebody to just decide to put something on the right when it should be on the left or whatever. Those are important things to consider.
Yeah, so after doing logo design for, almost 25 years now, I can't think of a single small or micro business that has gone out of their way to create a style guide. I've had a bunch of medium-sized businesses, and almost all large and enterprise-level businesses have style guides because they want to be very refined and consistent in how they do their presentations with their identity. But that's not to say that you can't do what you just said. Just write the rules down. Just have a one-page style guide of here are the font faces, here are the hexadecimal colors and the Pantone colors that we're going to use. Here are, you know, four or five quick rules on things that you're allowed and not allowed to do with the logo. You don't have to write a 200-page document on how your style is created like an enterprise-level company might do. And it's very valuable to think of these things through and define them so that everybody is able to apply the ideas in the same way. Consistency is hugely important.
Absolutely. So the last thing that we're going to talk about here is once you do go through the brand discovery session and discover your archetype and start thinking about your brand and your brand strategy that way, then you want to look at your logo very carefully. And again, we've talked about this before, but sometimes when our clients pick their archetype and they know they're going to go in that direction with their brand, they're like, oh, do I have to redo everything about my company? And again, we're going to say, no, you don't. But there's a lot of tweaking that can be done to make your brand more powerful. And sometimes that starts with the logo. So right. You've been using your logo. It's important to you. You spent a lot of time designing it. It's out on a lot of places, your website, your social media pages, your t-shirts, whatever you've put it on. And that, you know, creates brand equity for yourself. People are starting to recognize it. They refer to it. They connect it with you and your company. So you don't want to just come out with a whole brand new logo that looks completely different. But like we said, there's a lot of things that you can do to tweak it and make it more powerfully connected to the brand archetype that you've chosen. And Kevin, you're going to talk about a little bit about how we can do that.
Right. Well, so let's go back to that whole decision-making process. As you're listening to this, you might have actually pulled out your business card or, you know, looked at your own website and evaluated your own logo in the context of what we've been talking about. And I hope you found some good things there. But let's take an extreme case. Let's say we have a company called Butterflies and Unicorns.
I like it already.
And their logo has, not too surprisingly, a unicorn with butterflies. And then they go through the archetype, brand archetype process, and they decide that they want to be a ruler archetype.
Hmm.
Huh. That doesn't really jive now, does it?
No.
You know, the concept of unicorns and butterflies being a dominant, powerful ruler archetype that's all about power and in your face and being number one in the industry, they just really don't jive. In a scenario like that, if you are absolutely sure that you're going to only embrace the archetype of the ruler, then you probably are going to be forced to reconsider your name and your logo. And that can be really, really painful. So what you're throwing away when you make that big of a change, and I'm talking about throwing away the name and starting from scratch, throwing away the logo and starting from scratch, you're throwing away brand equity. It's the value that has been built up over time. So let's say your company, Butterflies and Unicorns, is a 10-year-old company. How many people know you by that name? And if you change your name, how easily will it be for your current customers to adjust, to recognize you by the new name, and then to be able to find you online? What happened to them? They just disappeared. Last time I saw them was 2 years ago, and I can't find them anymore. Well, that's because you threw away your brand equity. So you don't do this lightly, right? But let's say we have an old logo where I want to just shift from something where there was no brand archetype thoughtfulness put into it before at all because we hadn't thought about it, but now we've made a new decision. And so I'm trying to shift from an old kind of plain Jane logo and I want to make it a little bit more gestury. Well, picking a couple of different font faces that are similar to the old ones, but that are a little bit more playful, or taking the old colors and tweaking them so they're a little bit more saturated, a little bit more energetic. So that's what you were talking about, Amy, is tweaking sometimes is all that's necessary to bring it close enough, to bring it within the brand archetype, right? So I think a great example of this, and you can actually Google this when you get a chance, or if you're sitting at a desktop, you can do it right now. Google UPS logo change, and you'll find that if you click on the images tab at the top of your Google search, your result search, you'll see side-by-side comparisons of the old logo, which was a shield with the UPS logo type in the middle of the logo and a little ribbon at the top. And then the new one, which is very shield-like and has a little swoosh. And so when this logo changed, the very first time I saw it was probably about, I think they did this about 12 years ago or so, 12 or 13 years ago. And the very first time I saw it was on a truck. And it just jumped off the truck and slapped me in the face. And, hey, look at this new logo. I'm like, whoa, look at that. I asked other people that I knew, said, hey, did you see the new UPS logo? And they're like, no. for like 2 years, hey, have you seen the new UPS logo? No. Did they change it? It was subtle. It's the same shape. It's the same colors. The fonts are almost identical. They are absolutely different, but they are almost identical. They got rid of the little bow, and they put in a little swoosh. The most dramatic thing is they ramped up the colors. They put in the glossiness and the reflections and the 3D effects, and it has a much, much more contemporary look and feel to it. So they did a complete revamp, but they stayed true enough to the old logo that very few people noticed it. And that's kind of your goal. If you need to go through a logo revamp, a redesign of your identity, be very sensitive to the fact that you want to try to not throw away all brand equity. But if you've got a name like Butterflies and Unicorns and you want to be a ruler, well, you probably don't have a choice.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So we hope that this helped you think about your own logo, or if you're in the process of designing a new logo for your business, we hope it gave you some really powerful things to consider. Again, you can go to our show notes for the podcast and look up some of these things that we talked about. The links will be there. If you need help with your logo design, just want to chat, want a consultation, give us a call. You can get in touch with us from our website or any of our social media platforms. And we will talk to you next week.
Thanks for your time, Amy.
Thanks, Kevin.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.